Welcome to the ASU Sports Business Podcast. This podcast recording was a conversation that I had with Mescarin. Mescarin is the head of women's football at CAF. And we had the privilege to discuss the recently released report that CAF have produced on the women's football landscape in Africa. If you haven't read it, there'll be a link in the description of this for you to access it. But it's really insightful. It covers all of the member associations in Africa and provides a good insight of their women's football and the condition of it. And so in this conversation with Mescarin, we went through each section, which was development and participation, leagues and competitions, structure and governance. There is a final part in the report which goes through all of the member associations, but we just focused on these three key points. This was a live session, so we did have questions from the floor, which will also be included in this podcast. But yeah, it was another wonderful insight, and this is just the beginning, as Mescarin said. Some people may be surprised, or let me just use the word surprised in terms of some of the insights. But Mescarin did stress that this is the first one that CAF will continue to produce, and this will provide the foundation to grow and further develop women's football on the continent. So as usual, before I stop talking and get into the recording, please do subscribe to our podcast across Apple and Spotify. It really helps with all that we're doing. We also have the recording itself on YouTube. So if you want to watch it, feel free to jump on our YouTube page and you can watch the video there. As always, if you haven't subscribed to our newsletter as well, please subscribe to that. That is a real powerful tool in order to share and distribute key information that's happening in the Pan-African sports space. So please do subscribe. And if you want us to help you share information, please feel free to reach out to us. I'll be more than happy to do so. But enough from me. We hope you enjoy the podcast. And until next time, take care and see you all soon. Hey everyone, thanks for joining. Hope you are well. As I always do, as you can see at the bottom, my name is Gabriel, founder of Africa Sports Unified. Once again, thanks for joining. For those who often, engage with our content, welcome back. And for those who are maybe joining for the first time, I'm going to say good to see you, but obviously I can't see you, but thanks for joining as well. Today, we have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful conversation about a very important subject in sports, especially for the continent, which is on women's football. And I'm so pleased that my good friend has taken time out of a very busy schedule to have a conversation with us about the report. I'm so glad to have Mescarin with us today, who will of course share her insights and just give us a bit of background knowledge about the report. So Mescarin, how are you? Thank you for joining. How are things?
Hi Gabriel, thank you for having me. Things are great here in Cairo.
Wonderful, wonderful. I was thinking, I was going to say some Arabic words, but let me not try and embarrass myself. Well, I know, shukran and marhaba. But yeah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Great. So for those joining, just a bit of house rules again. So we'll have a conversation. I'll ask Mescarin a few questions. Please feel free to drop questions in the comment section. And good questions will ask to Mescarin. So please feel free to engage and comment on there. No different, we'll read those out to Mescarin throughout and at the end of the conversation. So, just to begin with, I hope everyone who has joined has managed to have some time to read through the report. If not, I will just quickly add it in the chat section, in the comment section, so people can have access to that if they haven't done so already. It's a very, very robust report, and we're just so grateful that we have actually some data like this about the women's landscape, women's football landscape in Africa. And so I guess maybe the first question to you, Ms. Graham, is maybe why? Why now? Why have you decided to put the report together? And if you can give us a bit of background in terms of how, because you mentioned just before, the process that started a while back, how that process actually went.
Thank you, Gabriel. When we speak about women's football and football in general in Africa, we say it's developed, it's moving forward. But where is the real thing that quantified and tell us the number? Our idea in the Women's Football Development Department was that, yes, we can speak about women's football in general moving forward, women's football growing, women's football developing, but we never had that data, that number that can tell us the progress we have so far and the involvement of women in the in playing, refereeing or coaching. And it was very important to us, especially moving forward, to have a reference and a benchmark. So this starts a while back when we joined the Women's Football Department. When it was established in 2018, there was nothing we couldn't find in terms of data numbers. So at that time, we need to put the strategy out. So we ask questions, we get the stakeholders engaged. But it was always in our background, in our part of also our one of our strategy was to have a landscape report where we can say in terms of number, yes, we have this amount of players, this amount of coach, this amount of referees, and moving forward in 10 years, we have progressed from this number to the next number. So it was very crucial to have this, and we are happy to do it.
Great. And I guess just how, I mean, you mentioned the importance of having this report and, just how great it is to actually have it. But in terms of actually the processing, collating all of the data, because it's huge, you've done it for all the
Yes.
member associations. It's not like
Yeah.
you've done it
So,
for five member associations or so.
what we did was we tried to see what do we want to know. We want to know about the development in the participation. We want to know how women's football is governed and structured in the inside our member association. And we also wanted to know the competition data. So, we put three main focus points, which is development and participation, competition and league, and then governance and structure, the women's football structure in our member association. Then we developed question based on those three pillars, and we sent out these questions to all our member associations, and we gave them a time to reply to these questions. It took us almost 6 months just to collect the data, giving our member association ample time to reach out to their own regional association, their own branches inside the member association, collect the data and submit to us. And then we analyze with an outside company, we analyze the data and we came up with a conclusion and the numbers that you see inside the landscape report.
Great. Thank you so much for that. And I guess we've previously spoken about and we try to highlight the importance of data and having data on the content in sports. And from our perspective, there can obviously be a lot more data out there because data provides the basis to then make calculated decisions. And so I guess this report, just on the landscape of women's football, really does give a what's the word? A real insight and understanding to the actual status and positioning and condition of the landscape of women's football, the benefits and then also opportunities for growth in those areas. And yeah, I guess this report really is a precedent in doing so.
Measures growth as we move forward. It measures growth, and as we move forward, all of our activities will be designed based on this report. It's how we can reach forward. How many coaches do we have? How many do we need? Which member association have less number of coach, and which member association is okay for the moment? So it will also give us a focus idea where we should move forward and how we can move forward. This will be a very key part of our strategy for 2024, 2025, because the data's that have that has that we have now can show us where our focus should lie on.
Exactly.
I think
That's
data is
wonderful.
also a great way to market yourself, to market the product you have. We can say now that we have this amount of players playing, we have this amount of league. If you are sponsoring in women's football, if you are coming or if you are attracted to women's football, your reach out are this. So we can show in terms of data, and data is one of the keys area where you can attract sponsors and marketers.
100%. We recently done a well, I was giving a lecture to a group of students and professionals in sports, and they actually used the this report as an example to really highlight the landscape and the opportunities that that now, for example, if you're looking to grow, and we'll come into this section as well, to attract sponsors and whatnot, this is an important document to do so. And it allows other people to then position themselves to see how best they can support and help in the growth of women's football in the country, which is very important. So no, hats off to you and the wider team for putting this together. And so I guess just to delve into the actual report. And so we'll go section by section, as you mentioned. There are three key sections. Well, there was four. The last section was about each member association. But the three key sections are development and participation, leagues and competitions, and then structure and governance. And so we'll go through each section and just to unpack that. So to start with, the first section on development and participation, which was extremely insightful. As you mentioned, it gives ideas into who is participating, competitions, senior teams, under 17s, under 15s, etc. And so the first question that I want to pose to you is, so from the report, it said that there were 26 or 26 member associations had more than 1,000 registered female players, and three member associations had more than 10,000. So that's a big disparity, a big gap between the 1,000 and the 10,000. But I guess maybe just from your knowledge, can you maybe share some insight if you do have or an idea into, the reason for the disparity and maybe some things that can be put in place to maybe decrease the gap in that between the member associations?
So when we see this disparities, it's because the registration system that the member association is and when are players registered. For example, in a good example can be the biggest registered player that are found in South Africa, which is 46,000. More than 46,000 players. So sometimes in member associations, the registration system is served only for the league, or players are registered when they enter the league or a competition. While in case of South Africa, where players are registered when they are in under 15, under 13 regional competitions. So this is where the disparity happened. Some of our member association register players when they are under 17, under 20, or when they are in a school competition, the case of South Africa, while the others register them when they reach the top level and when they reach the clubs. Some member association use registration system like the FIFA International Transfer System. Some use the domestic one. It's very important that our member associations understand it's key to register players, and this is one of the things we are now moving forward and pressuring our member association to do so. With the new club licensing regulation, for example, that CAF actually push out, we are the second confederation to introduce a separate women club licensing regulation in the football scene. Now we're pushing member association to have a contract with players. And when you have a contract with players, players are registered. So this will give our member association a push to register and to have their players. Also, the second thing is now we have a CAF a school competition, and in the school competition, all the participants are registered
Oh,
when they are
really?
entering the school competition. So now we're increasing and we're pushing forward in terms of player registration. Still, there is not it's not a trend to register, especially female players. They play with a club without contract, most of them still. So this is why the big gap you see in terms of registered players. Some of them are just listing out only the players who are currently playing in a league or in even in a top competition only. They don't even register the tier two, tier three, even if they have those competition. That's why this big gap is exhibited.
That makes sense. And I know in the next section of leagues and competitions, there was data around how many member associations have a professional women's league. And based off what you're saying, the more that there are professional leagues and clubs that then offer contracts, then we'll see an increase in the amount of registered players. So that makes a lot of sense. And you even touched on again the different platforms that member associations use to register players. I guess from a governance perspective or perspective from CAF, would it be better to have a just one registration platform that all member associations across CAF use, or does that not really make a difference at all?
It is. It makes a difference. CAF, we have a system called CMS, which is Competition Management System, and all of our players who are participating in the African Cup of Nations in the Club Champions League, they are registered on that system. But for the international system, where players are needed to have the certificate to move from one member association to the other, they need to have the international transfer system. They need to register in this system. So what we are doing is we are pushing our member association to have their own registration system that fit into CAF CMS and the international transfer system, I guess, so that it can be linked. However, right now we are still working on having a general registration system. However, it is the key or the important thing that is to have players registered when they are in their youth system, so that they are followed up to the professional scene when they are shifting into professional football, so that we have their data. That is the most important thing we're focusing on.
And I guess also, even slightly looking further out of the sports ecosystem in terms of, safeguarding players and athletes, it's very important, as you mentioned, that if they are registered with a professional club, etc., then at least they're in the CAF database and system so they can be safeguarded as well. So I guess that's another important aspect. And so also this report doesn't just focus on, of course, football, I mean players. It focuses also on the coaches and the level and the number of coaches within the game, women's football in Africa. And so from the report in this section highlights the amount of coaches who are licensed as well. Maybe can you just highlight if there are any particular, I don't know, initiatives or things that you may have in place to maybe increase or incentivize coaches to become A license?
So right now, CAF have rolled out the CAF coaching convention, in which all member association are trying to sign the convention and trying to get into the coaching system. If you see the numbers are really small. We understand that there is a bigger need to fill this gap, especially when you see in terms of A, B, C licenses, we only have 80 CAFE licensed female coaches in the continent. This is a really small number, and we want to push them to be B and C licensed. The initiative we have right now is pushing our member association to conduct the C license just for female coaches. We have already contacted, and some of the member association like Ghana, Algeria are doing it as we speak here in May and June. Also, like a member association like South Africa and Morocco have been doing this for a long period of time. But we need to push our women to come to coaching. And some of the thing that is hindering them to come to coaching is whenever there is a CAF licensing coach, member association ask for a fee. So as CAF, we are trying to support the member association in a way that they do not ask for that fee when they come to the women's football or when it comes to women's C license courses, because they need to go to C license and B license and then A license. So at least when for the insurance level, which is the C license, we are trying to support the member association so that they are not asking for the fee to have the first C license. Once they have C license, then it comes to the coach's ability to move forward to B and A, to push and move forward. So we are pushing this initiative in our member association to conduct a separate course, C license course for female coaches. Plus to that, in CAF convention, it's always a must that 10% of the participants in any course need to be female. So that is part of the convention. And also using the club licensing regulation, we're really pushing for our coaches, especially who are competing in the Champions League, to have A, B, and C license, which will also move. I know there are men coaches and female coaches who are coaching the clubs right now, but it will also initiate the female coaches to have or to go through the licensing system. So we are taking this kind of initiation to push our coaches and to have more coaches, more female coaches, qualified coaches in our member association. And at the end of the day, it's the member association initiative to have more female coaches, because it makes sense when we talk about participation. It's not just playing or administrating, but the coaching need to be a big focus. So we're pushing forward to have a separate C license, B license, and A license for female coaches.
That's great. And I watched the series that you've done. I think it's She Africa that you released during Women's International Month of March. And there's a great one on referees, but also I think one on coaches. And you had Desiree Ellis speaking there. I think, you know, those examples are really good, not case studies, but yeah, good examples for other coaches and other women who want to participate, not just as players, but as referees, as coaches as well. So yeah, that's another really, really good series.
Yeah, and moving forward, one of the things we learn from our players, because when we do competition, we also do this thing called meet the coach and meet the captain. And one of the captain actually last Champions League, she was like, I don't know what to do when I stop football. So the initiation we have now moving forward is to provide opportunities for senior national team players to move into coaching. And we have a great generation of players who are now moving and transiting into coaching and refereeing. So we will also provide, like when we send the C license, when we send the letter to our member association pushing for the C license, we have said that please focus also, one of the criteria we should focus on is to have previous players or players who are now at the end of their career to be engaged in coaching courses, so that we can bring more coaches who have a player experience into the women's football scene.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that would definitely improve the whole game as a whole. And so another section of this development participation mentioned just the focusing on the women's senior team and the level of that. So out of the 54 member associations, five, I'm just going to say a few stats here, five countries did not have an active women's senior team, two didn't respond. Of the under-20s, women's team, nine member associations did not have an active team, two didn't respond. of the other under 17 level, 33 did, 19 did not have a team. At the under 15 level, 7 did, and 43 did not. So we can see from the women's team, senior team, down to the under 15s, just maybe the, yeah, I guess the differentiation in the numbers of participating countries that have those specific teams. And so, was there a clear, or is there a clear correlation for the member associations that had a women's team at all levels, as in like for a member association that had a team at the under 15, under 17, under 20, and senior team, compared to maybe another member association that did not, was there a clear difference in their results or in the output, or maybe in the success that they had, maybe on field and also in terms of their development and participation levels?
Yes, I think there is a big correlation between having these national teams, because the longest run, for example, let's say the career of Oshuala. Oshuala have played in under 20 national World Cup, and she was even awarded as the best player in that World Cup. So you can see that her transition in her career was affected by that, because when you play football, experience matters. And when you have someone who have experience playing in under 17, under 20, and then the senior national team, then you have a whole-rounded player who's not just talented, but knows how to handle match, not knows how to handle games, knows how to handle playing in a pre in pressure. So this is a big thing, and we have seen that. For example, the development of Morocco. Morocco is an example of how national team, a continuous growth in national team, can affect the success of your team. South Africa is another example. South African national team also, they participate in under 17 Women's World Cup, under 20, and then they make it to the senior World Cup. So now countries like Morocco, Tanzania, Uganda, they're coming up, and their success, their national team success, depend on their under 20 and under 17 success. That's what we've seen in Tanzania, the under 17 team now going, winning the COSAFA championship before for under 17 and under 20, and making it to the World Cup. Now this national team, this team that was under 17, we know that when they become a senior national team, they will be one of the unbeatable teams, because the girls have all the experience they need. The same in Morocco, the same in South Africa. So there is a big correlation between having a constant under 17 and under 20 and a senior national team. We understand that most member associations focus on the senior national team, because always in women football, it's handled at the senior level. Most of the senior players also start playing and at the young age. Some of them are still under 17 and they are playing for the senior team. And under 20, they are still playing for the senior team. That's why they have a long career span, because they start the senior team at a young age. And they focus on the senior national team because we only used to have a senior competition, which we still have. And under 17 and under 20 used to be just FIFA World Cup qualifiers. But now, because our zonal association are doing under 20, under 17, and competitions, it's becoming strong. And because of the Champions League also, our national teams are becoming very strong. And there is a big correlation between having a gradual national team, and it has a big effect on the success of the senior national team for a long run.
No, well said. You even touched on competitions as well. So the importance of having competitions, which I was going to
Exactly.
ask you, but that definitely is the same correlation, right? So the
Yeah.
more competitions there are for women's football, the better.
Exactly. At CAF right now, we are also working on an initiation for under 17 girls competition zonally, so that they can have a good club competition zonally for under 17. And moving forward, we will do it before we can do it continentally. So we are working, because of this data, we are working forward to have an under 17 integrated competition.
Great, great, great. I guess maybe just from your opinion, is there anything else from this section that maybe you want to highlight? No pressure at all, but let's just.
I think this data shows us where we stand in terms of quantifying things. I know people might be disappointed with the number of registered players, but I just want to say that that doesn't show how many girls in Africa play football. It just showed that how many girls have reached out into the federation's registration system. We know that there are millions of girls who are playing football generally in Africa, and that's why we are pushing forward to professionalize the women's football scene to make sure that they have a place to register and to play professionally in a safe environment. And I'm sure in the long run, when we see this data, and maybe when we do our second landscape analysis in 2025, we will have much more. We have moved forward a bit, and we will have much more players registered in the system. I think that's all I can say. And I
Yeah,
hope every
definitely.
member association, I think it's very important to highlight that every member association, the 54 member association who have participated here in the landscape report, have their own snapshot, which any person who's interested in women's football about in their own member association can go and look at and see where they can move forward, where they can work strongly. That's it. I think at the
That's
end of the
great.
day, we just want to quantify the numbers we have and showcase that this is what we have now, and we will be moving forward based on this and see in 10 years where it takes us.
No, it's great, and it's obviously important to start off.
Yeah.
I don't think it's, yeah, people might be surprised, but in all things, there's progress and there's also opportunities to help further, the mission, etc. So once people do read through, if they haven't done so already, they'll definitely be able to identify those, even the what's great and the opportunities to help to further drive it. Okay, so next, were you gonna do you want to say something there, Miss Grimm?
No, thank you.
Okay,
Let's
next
talk.
section, cool. So the leagues and competitions now, which was again really interesting. And I guess maybe the first question to you is, and I've, for some context. Some top, not all top divisions in CAF for the 54 member associations, not all were organized by the member association themselves, maybe some were from other types of organizations. I guess in an ideal world, from your perspective, would it be ideal that all of the top divisions are organized by a member association? Or is it So, for example, I'm thinking maybe it might be ideal that it's run by member associations because, the professionalization, safeguarding, you mentioned about the CMS that you just installed, ensuring that people are registered there. Or is that actually not important that whoever's running the competitions sticks by, professionalization, contracts, CMS, etc.?
I think I believe it's okay. They are run by member association as long as what you described, there is a contract, there is a set of season, the competition calendar is released on time, the teams have been licensed and have their own structure, doctors, medical insurance, all of the things that you need from a professional club. I think the focus right now is sustaining, having a sustainable competition in all of our member associations, and players benefiting from those club competitions, and making sure that at least they have a certain type of contract in place so that they are safe and well. An ideal world, yes, leagues are run by an entity. However, right now, even if I don't feel like we are in that stage where we're pushing, we need to have an entity for women's team competition. Yes, if there is a separate league for men competition, then that league can handle also the women's competition, which we've seen in some cases. But still, until the women's football is sustainable enough, I believe it's okay to run by the member association And it's safe to be run by the member association because it's the governing body of football in that respective country. We just need to make sure that the league is sustainable, the clubs are in a professional setting, and that the players have a contract in their hand. That is the key, having even stadiums that are really qualified to have matches and the match schedule run properly. That's what we are wishing for when we see professional leagues in women's in Africa.
That makes sense. That definitely makes
Yeah.
sense. Even last year, again, we were blessed to have both Mescaram and MSIX from UEFA feature on our women's sports series, and they both focused and again highlighted the growth of women's football in both Europe and Africa. And at the time, the Euros was taking place, and I think the women's AFCON, Women's Champions League, or Women's AFCON had just completed. And so both competitions saw records in terms of attendance. And so, even what you're saying in terms of the stadia and infrastructure, which all helps in terms of that organization and professionalism. So hopefully, again, those strides can continue. Another key aspect, let's face it, is enticing, as you mentioned, sponsors. So 15%, which equated to seven out of the 54 member associations. So 15% of competitions have a title sponsor with an average length of 3.6 years. You mentioned about infrastructure and other things, but just what impact does or would this have having like a titled sponsor? What impact would this have on the overall level of participation, the standards of leagues and competition, especially as you just mentioned, in terms of the long haul and making it be sustainable?
Yeah, I think we are moving forward with this sponsorship, having four leagues at least a sustainable sponsor or a sponsor or a title sponsor. Now, for example, the South African League have the Hollywood Bet, the Cameroon League is sponsored by Guinness, and I think the Tanzanian League also have a sponsor. This is something that's now happening in the trend for before women football, women leagues. Still now, we don't have, sponsors. I think it goes with the brand building women's football as a product to attract sponsors. We need to have a sustainable league, like I said, that stand by itself, that's visible. It goes with the marketing and the commercialization of our leagues. What as CAF, what we're doing is we're training our women football administrators who are responsible for their competition, how to market and how to go out and search for sponsors. But to tell you the truth, in Africa in general, when we see the football scene, finding sponsors is really hard for both male and female football. So I think putting women's football as a visible brand and searching sponsors that can go with that brand or that brand identity is key. And as CAF, what we're doing is we're making sure that marketing strategy and commercializing strategy and promotion is part of our education for our administrators so that they can focus on finding a long-term partner or a long-term associate that can support their league. But moving forward, I think we will see more and more leagues being sponsors. We're bringing partners to the women's game.
No, it's very important, just for the whole ecosystem, to help develop and grow the game. So sponsors, and you mentioned sustainable ones as well, is very key. Another question. So with most national regional competitions favoring a home and away standard format, I guess does the length. So, in fact, the duration of some of those competitions range from 6.5 months to just short of 7 months, right? So, in terms of like we spoke about building something sustainable. We also mentioned in terms of the sponsor, how important is it to have regular games and make sure they're not spread out? I don't know, maybe two games a month. Just how regular is it to have that? So how important is it to have regular competitions? And as you mentioned at the beginning as well, having a calendar, a visible calendar that's stuck by so everyone's aware of it as well.
I think it's very important, like I said, to have a sustainable league that starts in a specific month and ends in a specific month. But when you see the competition, most national team competition, our the CAF side have between 12 to 16 teams in a league. Some of them goes to 8, 10, but like it's in between an average of 13, which is like 12 to 16, and it takes them 7, 8 months to six to seven, 8 months. And I believe this is okay as long as the league is sustainably run, because we have to think about the time to prepare, time to rest in the middle. It's okay, but the thing is, the most important key aspect here is sustainable. Is the league happening year by year? Because we are seeing some leagues disappearing in a year and coming back after 2 years or after a year. So for us, it's very important to have the league running year per year. I think the format depends on the country's size, the clubs they have. We don't as CAF, we have no decision on how the format is, but it depend on, like I said, the country size and the format that the member association selects. Some member associations select two groups of, for example, A, Group B. They play, and then at the final, two clubs from the Group B, Group A team come and play based on their size of the country. There are some countries are really big, and in Africa, transportation is not really
Yes,
easy. So they try to do a zonal regional league where there is a final tournament. So I think the key point is sustainability, and the league running more than 6 months. It's also advised by FIFA to have a league that run more than 6 months if you want to call it a league. So I think that's good, but we just need to make sure that we have a sustainable league that doesn't disappear, and it's done seasonally continuously.
that's extremely important in terms of being consistent. And again, we like to focus on, the have a holistic view of the sports industry. So if you're consistent with your product, that would allow more sponsors, or even firstly, that would allow the necessary investment to drive. It will increase the demand and the eyeballs. And then once that happens, then you can start to, have sustainable and sponsorship involved to make it more sustainable. So that's a very, very good point. And another question on this section that I want to ask is, again, from the report, so evidence shows that there is still work to be done to increase the amount of member associations that run a professional league. We're only 4 out of the 54 indicating that the league is professional. So again, we've touched on a few things in terms of what can be done, but do you reckon there's any other aspects that can be implemented or targeted in order to help drive or increase the amount of professional women's leagues in the CAF region?
I think there need to be more investment when it comes to women's football, be it the member association, or the member association going out and searching partners. When we invest in the clubs, because the clubs need to pay a salary for players to make it professional, because professional player, in a sense, is someone who play football and can support their lifestyle through the salary they get. As of now, when we speak, it's very rare that we find a professional league or professional clubs in women's football. There are some like South Africa, Ethiopia, Tanzania, Morocco now, for example. What the member association did was really great. Now there is a set of salary by the clubs that need to be paid to the players based on tires. And that kind of decision done by a member association can push for the professionalization of the league. Like Morocco said, you have to pay A to B, A, B, C, like tier of salaries for players. If they are at this age, the A tier get this, the B tier get this, the C tier get this. This is a decision done by the Exco and then by the Federation, which really push the clubs to pay a constant salary for the players and to have a certain privilege for the players to have a salary. And now we can say that the Morocco League is sustainable, or the Morocco League is one of the professional league in the continent. So this kind of decision can push forward the women's game. So the member association can make this kind of decision and invest, because that money, also the federation put some money toward this. So if the member association can invest on this kind of initiation, and the clubs can go out and search partners to make sure that everything is paid, or to make sure that the players are paid, the players are coached by a certified coach, they have a medical insurance, all of that, then we can push forward to professionalizing the women's game. I think the biggest question is here, we need investment and a key decision when it comes to women's football.
No, well said. I think that's the hurdle for obviously not just women's football but others as well in terms of attracting the necessary investment. And even on that, there's a comment here by Ade Dami, who mentioned on investment that there is a need to also encourage professional leagues to be organised by non member association entities. I think that's going back to the first question I asked. He said that is the more sustainable way of driving investment into women's professional football, especially into infrastructure for professional football. That investment must come first before sponsorship, which is what we just alluded to, or what you just mentioned now, in terms of attracting investment and the hurdles that comes with that. But I think there are definitely examples, as you mentioned, like Morocco, Tanzania, South Africa, etc., that mention or just good case studies for what can be done when you have everyone on the same page and willing to drive and grow women's football. For those who was just joining, again, welcome. If you have any comments or questions, please leave them in the side and we'll ask them to Miss Graham at the end. So thanks for that again. So going on to the final section, again, there's a fourth section of the report about each member association, but we don't have the time to go through all 54 member associations individually. And so
52.
52, sorry.
52.
So going on to, so I just look at the comments, but I'm gonna get distracted. But going on to the structure and governance section of the report, which is very interesting actually, just in terms of the growth and the, again, I mentioned that I went through this report with the group and they were very, very fascinated, especially in this section, just about the growth and the things that are happening in social media, etc. So first question I have to you is, how can the level of engagement on social media improve and increase, to be honest with you? Like, are there, I know it's quite difficult from CAF obviously to especially in this area of social media, because each can have their own strategies. And I know you said that you have like education for CAF administrators and like marketing and promotions. Maybe outside of that, are there any other maybe plans in place to help support the member associations with their presence on social media and just, the general marketing? Because of course you could have a great product, fantastic talent, but if there's no way to market for people to know what's going on, then that's going to be difficult to, for things like increase demand, get people watching, or as we just spoke about, entice investment. So in terms of, outside of maybe the educational programs that you have in place to support these member associations, perhaps maybe any other plans in place to support in terms of the growth for social media, et cetera, and things like that.
I think now our member associations are aware that there is a need to push forward from the social media's perspective. If you see now, there are more matches being live on Facebook or on YouTube than ever. As CAF, we as CAF also have grown in terms of social media and digital engagement. Before 2018, we only have a Twitter handle, but now there is a separate women's football brand identity, a separate women's football social media and digital outlets, and we have a really good engagement in our Facebook, TikTok, all of the social media, Instagram. I think this is also a way to showcase that our member association need to do also more. Plus to that, we as CAF are covering some of our leagues, the champion of their league in Nigeria. This is the champion in Ghana. This is the champion. Some things that are happening in our zonal union, competition in our zonal union. I think this also push pressure to our member association to have their own outlet. Plus to that, I think our commercial department, because this is handled by commercial and marketing, is working with our member association to support them in terms of growing their own commercial and marketing strategy. Those are the things that's happening right now.
Great, thanks for that. Yeah, it's a very important aspect, and it's obviously goes into the whole professionalization of leagues and governance. And I
Yes.
guess also in general, how do you help member associations have a designated marketing strategy? Obviously, CAF have one in particular, which is quite good, that's accessible to the wider public. I don't imagine, I could correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't imagine maybe sitting down and maybe working hand to hand. But in terms of having like a designated marketing strategy, is there anything that CAF are doing again, and also to make it more accessible to the public in order that they can, just like with this data report that you've produced, you've published it, and you've also made it public so people can actually read it and see where it is. So are there anything similar to that for member associations?
I think this is something that the commercial department's right now working on towards it. For us, like I said, we are more focused on educating our own women's football administrators and women's football leaders to have their own marketing strategy, their own reach out strategy, and how they can attract partners and how they can attract a support system. But moreover, the strategy is dealt with another department, which is a commercial department of the CAF.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense. Okay, fine. I think in terms of the overall understanding or even just the knowledge that you shared from the report, that A, it's very important that obviously the first one was produced and again provides a lot of insight, shows the growth and areas for and opportunities for growth as well. You've highlighted the importance of professionalization, having certain things in place around structure and governance, competitions as well, also touching on, which can safeguard the athletes and also just help to grow women's football on the continent in general. But in terms of just a few questions as well before we go to the floor. So you have this report. You also have another report which you have produced, which was the, I'm probably going to say the name wrong, but just the CAF Women's Development Strategy, I think, from 2020, 2023, if I'm correct, which again was a great report and great insight. And you highlighted five key areas I'm not going to say all five because I don't remember them, but like professionalization and leadership, marketing promotions, and a few others as well. And so I guess that cycle is coming to an end. I guess you'd probably be working on the next report. But for the next one, how would we see the insights from this report implemented or taken into consideration for the next women's development strategy as a whole?
Yes, this report, like I said before, will be a benchmark for our strategies moving forward. This report by itself was a part of the 2023 2023 report strategy because one of our key aspects in professionalizing women's football was having a data that can show us where we are standing. I think we have achieved a key part of the strategy 2020-2023, running, for example, establishing the Women's Football Champions League, which was a very key objective of the competition pillar. We have five pillars, like you said. We have development, we have competition, marketing, social aspect, and professionalization of the women's football. In terms of professionalization, we with the league being established now, we have the Women's Football Club Licensing Regulation, which dictates how women's football or moving forward, how women's football can be professionalized. Now that we are moving with our zonal association to have a constant under 17, under 20 competition, which is also part of the competition, key aspects of the competition, part of the strategy. So we have achieved, for example, we have a women's football brand, which was also a very key aspect of the marketing strategy. So overall, we have achieved some of the key objectives set in that strategy. And moving forward, whatever is left from that strategy, plus the numbers or the key findings we have in this document, in the landscape document, will be a great feed for our strategy and our projects. Now we can say CAF is doing this project, and then when we say why, we can say because, for example, we are doing a C license, or we are making sure the C license is available for all female coaches. Why? Because we don't have an ample amount of coaches in the continent. The data shows that. So this data is a reference and a very good benchmark to move forward and make sure that women's football is professionalized and make sure that women's football is sustainable. At the end of the day, we want to create a sustainable women's football landscape where a girl can feel safe playing football. Football is available for the girl to enter and love football, play football, for a woman to come to the football administration and be part of it without fearing anything. So we want to make sure that football is available for everyone. So and moving forward, that's what we are going to focus on.
Great. Another question to ask as well is, I think you mentioned it earlier on as well, but of course, with the along with the support of CAF and the folks of CAF and women's football, FIFA also have initiatives and supporting the development of women's football in Africa. They have like FIFA Forward and just a huge drive of the development of women's football as part of this FIFA Forward program. Is there much collaboration? Maybe not on a day-to-day, but just you're aware of the things that are happening or being done by FIFA and position yourselves alongside that to make sure that things can be maybe be further pushed when there's a bit more cohesiveness and collaboration on those matters.
Yes, as the Confederation and FIFA being the mother confederation, the mother federation for every football, of course there is a big collaboration between FIFA and us, the women's football division. They were a key part of our women's football strategy development in 2020, 2023, and we work really close to each other. For example, last time when we deliver the female training workshop, they are always there supporting us and being part of the workshop. Of course, there are projects that we really work closely, and there are projects as CAF we handle. And so there is, for example, we run the under 17 and under 20 competition. Our CAF Women's African Cup of Nation is a qualifier for the World Cup. So there is always a correlation and projects that we work together. And the FIFA Forward being a big part of the Women's Football Development Platform, and plus to that, FIFA having a women's football programs that can benefit our member association. And we mentioned this to our member association, benefit from these programs, use these programs to push forward the women's football agenda. So yeah, we work hand in hand, and we support each other in developing women's football.
Great, thanks so much. And this final question from me, last one. So again, this is a wonderful like document and just insight to the landscape of women's football. But I guess from your opinion, being involved in day to day, what do you believe to be CAF's biggest achievement when it comes to women's football? And what do you think, if you can maybe name one thing that you think needs to be done to help further improve it?
I think since 2028, we have moved forward a lot. We have taken a big stride, and then the new administration, the CAF new administration, and the new president, from his key 10 key objectives, one of them is develop and grow women's football. And we have seen a big achievement, for example, the increasement of the Women AFCON prize, introducing a prize money for the Women Champions League. Like I said, the club, the Women's Football Club licensing regulation, the brand, the social media engagement, all of this is a big achievement. But more or less, I think the key achievement is putting women's football in the map and making sure as women's football is seen, because we don't shut up, we are always there. Speaking about it, we are creating things that can always make sure that women's football is agenda. I think that's really the biggest achievement. Now, when you go to our member association and when they see what's happening in CAF, they know that they need to move forward and they need to focus. Club Champions League, they need to strengthen their domestic competition because there is a big landscape now. There is a big competition called the Women's Football Club Champions League. So, this all of this initiation we have done, I think we have created in a way that women's football is not just the agenda, but something to work forward to achieve forward to. And we are putting it in the center of the football world in Africa. So I think that's the biggest achievement.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Yeah, there's been such huge strides in terms of even the Women's Champions League, even the investment in terms of sponsorship deals. That is not just for men's football, but women's football. So it allows it to grow as well. But thank you so much. I know, Henrietta, you had a question regarding investment, but I think that's one maybe for the commercial team. So hopefully we'll have a conversation with the commercial team where I can ask that question to them as well. But no, thank you so much, Ms. Green, for your time. I really understand you have a busy schedule, so I really do appreciate it. And to everyone who joined, thank you so much for joining. I really hope that you found this insightful. And again, if you haven't read the report, please do so. And if you see any opportunities, then please do what you can to help develop and grow women's football. We will package this up and we'll send it out to you again once it's done so you can listen to it and with a link to the report as well. But thank you, everyone. Really appreciate it. And until next time, take care. Thanks again, Miss Graham.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
No worries, anytime.